Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. Okay, welcome back. Hope you all had great lunches. I have a handout. I will come around with the handout. Just please have a seat and maybe raise your hand, and I'll find you after Elwood starts. We have here one of the great ARSC members. This is Elwood McKee. Yay! And I see Elwood is familiar to many of you. And he has been active in ARSC since 1979 and has made presentations at previous conferences on subjects as varied as cataloging, audio preservation, and Russian vocal recordings. He has been a record collector for over 45 years and has served as a consultant to a number of institutional collections. His particular interest in Anton Rubinstein is rather new and was sparked by the recent spate of recordings of works by this neglected composer. Let's welcome once again Elwood McKee.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. A brief preamble. The handouts have more to say to you than I do. You are more qualified to draw your own conclusions and inferences from the material than I. This session, regrettably, is based solely on recordings. The preliminary and fragmentary quality of the data used for the handout chart will be clear from the fact that only two nights ago, I ran into Rubinstein's settings of the Krylov Fairy Tales on Melodia LP in the Tower Clearance Shop downtown. The recorded examples are collector dubs, lacking the benefit of professional transfer. Now, remember this? Those of us who experienced elementary school music appreciation class probably heard Melody in F in second or third grade. Many of us sang a choral arrangement to words such as Welcome Sweet Springtime. Melody in F and the other potboilers noted in your handouts may well have been representative of the only music of Anton Rubinstein many music lovers were able to hear during most of this century. Considering the renown he enjoyed throughout most of the 19th century, it may seem strange that Anton Rubinstein and his music have been largely ignored until recently. To the extent he's been remembered, it is largely as a virtuoso pianist, a composer of trite salon pieces, and of a little-known opera, The Demon. Rubinstein was born November 11, 1829. He was a child prodigy, making his public debut at age 9. He continued to perform and tour until 2 years before his death in 1894. He made a successful visit to America in 1873. Paderewski noted in his memoirs that Liszt played the piano like an eagle, Rubinstein like a lion. And Glazunov's daughter reported that after attending one of Rubinstein's recitals, her father couldn't touch the piano for 3 days. Rubinstein was the founder and in 1862, the first director of the Russian Conservatory of Music in St. Petersburg. Tchaikovsky was among his first pupils. As a composer, he produced 20 major stage works. These included serious, comic, historic, and fantasy operas, and three sacred operas, oratorios, depending on how they were produced. He composed 6 symphonies, 3 orchestral portraits, Faust, Don Quixote, Ivan the Terrible, 6 piano concerti, violin and cello concerti, and various other orchestral works. To these may be added over 36 chamber works, a long list of piano pieces, a number of vocal works for ensemble, and over 150 songs. His brother Nikolai, an eminent pianist and teacher, when asked why he didn't compose, said, "Anton wrote it all." Why then the neglect? There are a number of reasons. In the first place, Rubinstein's musical theories and polemics resulted in attacks on him, which continued after his death. Rubinstein was too old-fashioned for the advanced thinkers of his day. His music was more influenced by Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer, and Grove includes Gounod, than the post-1848 musical revolutionaries such as Wagner, whom he rejected. In addition, he attacked the rising generation of largely self-taught composers who were to bring about the musical revolution that has shaped Russian music since. The so-called Mighty Handful and their spokesman Stasov and the composer Balakirev never forgave Rubinstein, even after they and their pupils adopted his rigorous standards of musical education. After his largely unsuccessful early attempt at a Russian nationalistic opera, Dmitri Donskoy, he abandoned the effort for a number of years, which proved to be critical for his future appreciation. When he returned to composing nationalistic music, generally after 1868, he was considered imitative by many critics. In the third place, Rubinstein's international success as a performer probably worked against him as a composer. He lived and worked in Germany and Austria for extended periods. He himself said that the Germans considered him a Russian and the Russians a German. More than half of his works premiered in Germany. In the same manner, more than half of his vocal works were set, at least initially, to German texts. This caused Stasov to attack the Teutonic circles of the conservatory. To some extent, anti-Semitism played a role. Although his entire family converted to Christianity in 1831, 2 years after his birth, although he wrote a number of works on Christian religious themes, including the opera Christus, and although the Tsar made him a hereditary nobleman for his services and awarded him the Cross of St. Vladimir for his contributions to musical education, he was attacked and the conservatory referred to as a Jewish musical institution by Mili Balakirev. Finally, it must be admitted that Rubinstein wrote some of our most hackneyed parlor pieces. Their overuse in every form possible has contributed to the widely held view of Rubinstein as a superficial note spinner by many musicologists and critics to the present day. During nearly the entire century following his death in 1894, Rubinstein and his music fell into obscurity. His reemergence, on records at least, is reflected in the charts included in your handouts. The acoustic recording period included a number of songs and arias, mostly in Russian, and a few short instrumental pieces. The titles recorded during the electrical 78 RPM era reflect an almost complete lack of major works on record if we exclude the excerpts from The Demon. The 185 recorded performances charted on electrical 78s include only 58 titles. During the LP era, we began to be able to hear some of the important materials thanks to the general expansion of the repertory on LP and gradually increasing availability of recordings from the Soviet Union and its Warsaw Pact neighbors. Many of these latter are not yet available on CD. For those able to seek out the complete demon and the Opus 34 Persian songs in particular, your resulting enjoyment will more than repay the effort. This is particularly important since the major weakness of the available CD repertory is lack of Rubinstein's vocal music. Against this, however, must be set the availability of 5 of the piano concerti, 5 of the symphonies, and a sampling of his other orchestral and chamber music. There are 54 titles represented on the 57 CDs charted. Of the 161 titles we've listed on the handout chart, 72 include works not recorded before the mid-1970s. Well, taken all together, this is hardly a Gesamtausgabe. Grove lists, in addition to the stage works, opus numbers up through 119, and more than 50 works without a signed opus number. We nevertheless have today enough of Rubinstein's music available on records to reach our own judgments of his worth and interest as a composer. Now we'll have a few selections, all we have time for in this short presentation. I apologize for the sound of this first excerpt from the fourth piano concerto. It was done in 1937 at Hoffmann's Jubilee concert, but Hoffmann's connection with Rubinstein and above all, what he puts into the music in this performance, I think justify it. Thank you. On to the opera Nero. I won't try to explain Vindex's wedding song. I don't even know if the notes will help very much. I suggest we let the music and the singer simply do their thing. We didn't get to hear more of Lisician than we did here in the United States. Rubinstein wrote so many solo piano works that I felt we had to include one. This one is played by another performer teacher, Arthur Lesser, who was born in 1894, the year of Rubinstein's death. Thank you. Finish that, but I want to stay within the time here. I've chosen a soprano aria from The Demon for two reasons. First, it would take a full program to properly illustrate the non-Goethe role of the demon himself. It's been sung by everything from high baritones to dramatic basses successfully, and we'd have to include too many examples. Besides which, not too many ladies have recorded Tamara's aria, and we thought that you might enjoy a less familiar piece. Relatively few arias in the Russian tradition seem to end on that blazing high note that's so characteristic of Italian opera. It makes for, I think, an interesting contrast. The fragment from the Fifth Symphony that we're going to hear may make up for our lack of time to play you any of Rubinstein's ballet music. This has a distinct dancing quality to my ear, and although short, I think gives an idea of his orchestral writing.
Thank you.
those who would say that's imitation Tchaikovsky, my reply would be, lucky the teacher to have such a pupil, lucky the pupil to have such a teacher. We're going to close with two brief songs from the Opus 34 Persian songs, which are set to some of the most ardent love lyrics I know. And I can only hope that one of these days, somebody like Leifa Kus or Dmitry Khvorostovsky will do them on record, or better still, that I can go hear them in concert. So while they're playing, I'll just say thank you.
О, дева рая, как они могут красоту твою снести, столько красоты. Как увижу твои ручки я, не могу понять, о, дева рая, как они могут наносить такие раны, такие раны. Как увижу твои губки я, не могу понять, о, дева рая, как они могут поцелуя отказать. Как увижу твои глазки я, не могу понять, о, дева рая, как они могут больше требовать любви, чем моя. Снизойди ко мне. Слышишь, как бьется сердце дева рая? Ты такого сердца не найдешь. Песню сладкую мою меня никто, дева рая, твою красу не
Quick announcements before the next presentation. I want you all to know there is now a printed list, 3 pages long, of attendees at the conference you can pick up outside. The banquet this evening, there's still a few more seats left available for it if you still want to sign up for it. It's going to be a real nice spread. It's a classy joint over there. For those of you who have been eating lunch in the Juilliard cafeteria across the street, it's that building, and when you go in the lobby, you take the elevator up to the 10th floor. For those of you who don't know where that is, you cross the street. It's the high-rise building right to the north. You go up the outside escalator to the plaza level, inside the Samuel B. Rose building, and take the elevators to the 10th floor. It'll be beginning at 6:30 with a cash bar while the caterers are setting up, etc., and then dinner will be set up for prompt serving at 7:30 sharp. Followed by, of course, the ARSC Discographical Research Awards, which Tim Brooks will be handing out. And a special invited guest who is going to be there at dinner with us, Arthur Tracy, known as the Street Singer. He's going to be celebrating his 95th birthday, and we're going to help him to celebrate, and we're going to ask him to come up and say a few words at the end of the evening. So it should be a real fun evening, and there are still a few seats left. Lastly, I don't know about the rest of you, but I miss David Hall, so I gave him a call this morning. He's doing great. He wishes he could be here. I wish he could, too. I really do. He's wearing a brace, and he is on his feet, and the prognosis looks very, very good. He did want to announce, he asked me to announce, that his 8,000 LP collection is up for grabs, for sale. For anybody who may be interested, give him a call. And you know I'm not lying when I say his remark was to tell you all, thanks for the memory.
John. And thanks, Elwood, for that lovely presentation. Okay, now we have Vince Pelote, a wonderful colleague who has never failed to make me smile. Vince is librarian at the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. As a discographer, he has worked on Billie Holiday, Lionel Hampton, and the Commodore label. He has written several sets of CD liner notes for Music Masters, Polygram, and GRP on Lionel Hampton, Bonnie Carter, Andy Kirk, Billie Holiday, and others. Let's welcome Vince Pelote.